Welcome to the Business Spotlight Series. My name is Marianne Hauser, and I'm the senior partner here at Serendipity Action Coach of Central North Carolina. Today, I have Jason Coonan, owner of Sunbird Storage in Winston-Salem, as my guest. He's a self-proclaimed storage guru. I found that out on LinkedIn, Jason. Today, we're going to be talking with him about his business, his journey to business ownership, maybe some of his challenges and best practices, and share a peek into what it's really like to run a storage business. If this is your first time on the channel, be sure to like and subscribe to get notifications when we drop new conversations just like this one. So Jason, welcome and thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Marianne.
Happy to. So to set the stage for our viewers, generally speaking, give us an overview of your organization and what your key focus is.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be here. And we run a self-storage property management business. So if you're an owner of self-storage or an investor in self-storage, you would hire us and we would run either a store that we own or a store that we manage for a third party. And you've probably seen many self-storage facilities around your city. They seem to be growing in popularity and it's quite a burgeoning business. So I got into it about 3 years ago and I've learned a ton already.
Awesome. Yeah, 3 years, you're on the other side of that ultimate 5 year. You know, everybody says if your business can survive 5 years, you've got it made. So hopefully this is you're all on the upside now. So are you the sole founder, owner, or are there outside investors?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a little bit complicated as many things are in real estate. Interestingly, I got into the business. I spent about 20 years in banking and came from the banking business and decided I wanted to strike out on my own. So I started a consulting company. And my first client in consulting happened to be a lifelong storage developer. So he had been building self-storage facilities in the southeastern U.S., you know, primarily North Carolina and Florida. But he had also been developing self-storage in Toronto, Canada for over 20 years. So being my first client in self-storage, I found the industry fascinating and decided to go from just being a consultant to moving into the business full-time. They named me CEO of their Canadian platform, and we became a new entrant into the Canadian market in 2020. So we started in Canada. As I mentioned, they had deep experience building self-storage facilities, but through the years, the three partners at the time, I became the fourth. They had been in and out of the property management business. So they had always been developing, but not always managing. Sometimes they would outsource the management of their properties to the more established large operators, the REITs, different REITs. To answer your question, there was three other partners already involved in the business when I got involved in 2020. That's when we launched our Canadian brand. And then in 2023, just last year, we launched our US brand, which is Sunbird.
Interesting. Yeah, when I looked you up, it said that you were started in Canada. So were you originally from North Carolina or are you from Canada?
That's complicated too. I'm originally from New York, but I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina for about 10 years. And then I've been in Winston-Salem for the last 12 years. So, and it seems like I'm living in Canada these days, but I go there for about a week every other month.
Gotcha. So does it make sense then that you own the Winston-Salem location as yours, but then you're still involved in the partnership or is it all part of the four team partnership?
Yeah. So when I mentioned that it was complicated, like I think many joint ventures are, we have kind of one set of partners for our Canadian brand and a slightly different set for our US brand. And then many of the properties are owned by other groups. So the ownership structure of each of the self-storage facilities themselves, there's some owners that may only own one facility and then there's others that own a handful of facilities. So just the real estate structures themselves are quite complicated. But one thing that's constant is kind of the way that we operate, the quality control, the management platform. So the property management sort of sits horizontally across all the assets.
Awesome. So then your role now, in this conglomerate, which is what it sounds like, what do you think your primary role is that you play in the business?
Well, when I got involved at first, changing careers, in my early 40s was a little bit daunting. I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are probably going to watch this video, and they're either, farther along in their journey, or maybe they're just starting out. And as you said, I've made it 3 or 4 years, which can seem like an eternity when you're just starting out. But even now, it still feels like a startup. But I think, just making that kind of career change and getting started, it's exciting. I think there's a lot of skills that are transferable from one industry to another. But for me, even though I didn't know much about commercial real estate or construction getting into it, I viewed my role really as just a people business and, managing both our own staff and kind of building a great team from the inside out, but also just how we deal with our clients. So I think despite the fact that the industry may be viewed as a real estate industry, I like to think that we're still in the people business. And that's where many industries, storage is just one of them, are kind of going away from people. They're trying to go towards more automation. But one of the ways that we try to differentiate ourselves is to invest more heavily in the people.
I love that. And yes, you're right. I just spoke to a bunch of HR folks earlier today, and it's amazing how process is now taking over the people side of just corporations, just business in general. So good for you. So when you look at your role, how many hours do you spend working in the business, growing it and scaling it, and on strategy and, in the business, actually getting the day-to-day done versus the business strategy and planning? What portion is getting it done and what portion is planning and strategy?
That is, I would say, somewhat hard for me to classify. I think just kind of starting out, and I would say, kind of like you described, the first 5 years, I would say is starting out. There's definitely a lot more time in the business than on strategy. It was definitely easier when I was in a more established, more mature firm with a bigger team to spend more of my time on strategy. But I can tell you, as an entrepreneur, where you have to wear many hats and you have a very lean team and you're just trying to, generate positive cash flow, it's a lot of time working in the business. And that's a transition that I'm trying to make now, which is to free up more time to work on the business. I think it's been particularly challenging, probably over the past 6 months, 6 to 8 months, because it was one thing to be running a Canadian operation with 25 locations across the country and 75 employees. And then last year, add to that my involvement in launching the US brand as well, and also becoming an owner in a marketing agency. So it was very busy, and spent, I would say, the minimum amount of time I needed on the strategy part, but it was very hard to not be in the business trying to get certain companies kind of off the ground. I think that's there's a lot of time that needs to be spent on that upfront.
Wow, you do sound very busy. We may need another whole business spotlight interview to just talk about your marketing agency. Starting a marketing agency is not easy. I know we coach lots of marketing agencies, and doing that while you're also trying to do this, that is a daunting endeavor. So I can't wait to hear more later about that. So if I were in the audience listening to this podcast, who primarily does your business serve?
So, there's probably, I would say, just two general ways to think about the way that we serve. I mean, the first is maybe more simple, where, our primary client, if you will, is a self-storage owner. So they need somebody to take care of their facility. And, generally there's a revenue sharing agreement. So they pay us a percentage of their revenue to manage their facility. So that involves staffing the facility, marketing the facility, leasing it up, and making it profitable so they don't have to worry about it. But then the more commonly known type of, you know, target customer or user of the facility would be in terms of the business to consumer side. So the retail customer who's going to be storing in our facility. And there are a lot of, I'm sure, misconceptions about who stores things in storage and the different uses. I know at first I didn't know much about self-storage or the uses. I would say somewhere around 20 to 25% of your customers are going to be business tenants. So they're going to be storing things like equipment, inventory, documents, files, other things like that. They tend to be a great type of tenant because they generally will stay for a long time because they have a constant business need versus somebody who you might think of is just storing during a move. So they're between homes and they're going to store for, you know, 3 months or 6 months, things like that. People like to think of students as, you know, target customers, but once again, they may store their belongings for the summer, but then they return to college and grab their belongings. So there's many, many different purposes for storage, and we have to ensure that we market to all the demographics.
Wow. Yeah. When I saw that you were on the list, I just assumed it was the direct to consumer. The whole property management side of it is something that was a surprise to me. So, and now that I think about it, some of the folks that we have seen at some of our events have been owners of storage facilities. They may even be clients of yours, which is kind of interesting. So I think you pretty much covered what makes your business unique. Is there anything else that you would want to throw in that adds to the uniqueness of Sunbird versus other storage companies?
Well, I would love to, because I feel like we really only began to sort of scratch the surface of what makes us different. If I go back to when I was doing the consulting work and thinking about, you know, is this a business that I want to, you know, work at full time, and sort of surveyed how other operators were sort of running their facilities and what their philosophy was, as we spoke earlier regarding things like staffing. It just became clear to me that there are still ways in what might seem like an otherwise commoditized business to really differentiate our brand. So when I think about the ways in which we're different, I mean, it's everything from, you know, if you look at our Sunbird brand, from just the quality of our facilities, the, you know, sort of differentiation of things like our logo and branding, the quality of the staff that we hire, the level of customer service we deliver, the type of marketing that we use. We talked earlier about what type of marketing we use. I think in our industry, like many industries, most operators are looking for tenants to rent from them. So they're paying a lot of money every month for Google ads. So effectively all of their money is being spent on either Google or an aggregator called Sparefoot. So they're spending just a lot of money to buy rentals. Whereas we invest our marketing budget in building higher quality websites with a better customer experience and investing in search engine optimization. So we feel that we end up spending about a similar amount of money on the marketing budgets for each of our locations, but we end up getting many more rentals as a result of that marketing activity. And then lastly, it comes into our sort of customer value proposition. So one of the common techniques, I would say, in self-storage these days, increasingly in 2023, was for some of the large operators to really offer very, very low prices to consumers, only to then send them rent increase notices after as few as 3 months to get a significant rent increase where your rent might double or triple. So part of our value proposition, because we try and position ourselves as more of a relationship-oriented company, much more of a value-oriented with full transparency, we're one of the only large operators that will guarantee 1 year of no rent increases. So the common belief in the industry is that you're signing a month-to-month agreement so they can raise your rent in as little as 1 month. We would rather tell the customer, you know, that your rent is $200 a month, but we guarantee not to change it for a year, so you can budget accordingly, versus telling you, you know, your rent is only $100 a month, and then 3 months later sending you a notice saying your rent is now $300 a month. So there's many, many ways, I think, to differentiate yourself in a mature industry, but we really have gone after the service level and the quality, and we find that there's not as much competition in this segment of the market.
Wow, that's absolutely interesting to hear. And your marketing strategy is a little different. So if I were to, and this is something that might be of value to the folks listening, what percentage of your income is dedicated back into marketing? You know, some people have a 3% of income, some have 2%. What is the percentage of your monthly sales that's typically invested back?
That is a wonderful question, which fortunately I've spent a lot of time studying, because we have to obviously compare ourselves to others. I would say short answer is generally 2 to 4% of our revenue for a storage facility is being put back into marketing. We have some advantages because generally we have large, high quality facilities, which give us some scale. So that percentage tends to be fairly low. But I think in self-storage, you know, if we're kind of 2 to 4%, I think many others are spending at least 5 to 10% on marketing as a percentage of revenue.
Yeah, very interesting. So one of the questions we ask every person who participates is, what is the number one marketing strategy that has brought you the most business? Is it your website that you just mentioned?
Yes. And in addition to it, it's all the work on the Google Business Profile. So our marketing agency is constantly spending time and labor on all the things that Google uses, you know, and its algorithm to get you to rank. And, you know, it's essential to us to try and rank, you know, in the top five in every market. With SEO, it takes time, which is why a lot of people don't want to invest in it. Generally speaking, you may not see the greatest results from launching a new website and from doing SEO in the first 12 months, but oftentimes the next 12 months and the 12 months after that, you can see spectacular results if it's done right. So the amount of investment is pretty sizable. When I first became an entrepreneur and I launched the website to my consulting company, it was a beautiful looking website, but it was just kind of like set it and forget it. You know, you build a website, you launch it, but there was really no investment in SEO. So as a result, I got effectively no conversions, no activity, no phone calls from the website. And conversely, you know, we've got 24 people that work on SEO for our storage companies all, you know, full time. And, you know, we drive tens of thousands of people to our website a month.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's funny, I think you have, maybe you've seen the script of questions, but you really are leading me right through the process here. So I'm going to skip a couple of these because I think you covered them. But as you look back on your journey so far, let's shift from marketing to what has been the most memorable roadblock or hurdle that you were challenged with and that you were forced to overcome?
Well, I would say in the past, you know, 4 years being an entrepreneur in many different businesses, from consulting to self-storage to marketing, I feel like there's always obstacles. And I think that's been something to just get used to, coming from like a larger corporate environment where, you know, there weren't as many frequent surprises. And when there were, you pretty much knew you were going to survive most of them. But I think when you're an entrepreneur, there's many, many surprises on a daily basis, because your scope also is so vast, like they can come from any part of the business. There's a lot of unforeseen things regarding, you know, whether it's, you know, raising capital, whether it's losing customers. That's something that I did not foresee. That was a big thing. So we grew our Canadian brand very fast, from like one location to 30 locations in 2 years. And And then some investors, wisely, to their credit, chose to exit and sold some properties that we were managing. They made a lot of money, but we lost, 25% of our book of business overnight. So there's just been a lot of obstacles. And I think you have to really manage the business conservatively and prudently, and you have to plan for kind of the worst case scenario. And that's kind of how we ran the business. And we were able to remain profitable even when we lost, 20 to 30% of our revenue.
Wow. So that snippet right there is going to be one that I think will be featured. That was really great advice for other business owners listening to this. So thank you for sharing that. So if we were to think about how you track your leads, right? You said that you're really focused on lead and conversion, which are words that, believe me, not every entrepreneur is thinking about on a daily basis. What do you use to track your leads, and how often do you track them and look at that data?
So when it comes to leads, we have, a variety of leads, especially on the, business to consumer side. All of our activity is tracked from its source. So we can see which leads come from our website. We can see which ones are coming through our Google profile, if we were running any ads. And then all those leads, we use HubSpot a lot. So all the leads that are coming through HubSpot. We also have a storage management software. So if someone submits an inquiry or they put a reservation in online, all of our staff at the store is notified. So we really try to be highly responsive. I mean, our business, like a lot of other, let's say, retailers, if you don't respond to the customer within probably 5 minutes, there's a good chance that they can get the same product, down the street. So we find if somebody's, sending us a chat request or a phone call and we miss it, we try to reduce the number of leads that we either miss or that are delayed. We want to be very quick back to the customer because they can get another quote. If we don't respond to them, they can pick up the phone or submit another inquiry. And that's been very helpful. We built our own kind of care center, which handles phone calls, emails, as well as live chat. We see within self-storage, which is kind of striking to me, but we see almost none of our competitors have a true live chat platform where there's an actual human chatting with them. And we see very high conversion rates in that space as well.
So yes, there can be huge frustration when you've got a chat bot and you really want a question answered. So that again goes back to your one of your USPs of making it be people focused, not process focused. And that's absolutely awesome. So we talked about you being in business now 3 to 4 years. Where do you see your business in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, the first thing is I've realized that with, certainly small businesses, it's impossible to forecast just the amount of twists and turns that we'll encounter. But, I'm kind of setting my sights on a long-term goal. We've got 25 locations in Canada right now, as an example, and my goal is to have 300. So we're just going to continue on that track. My time horizon is 20 years. So in the next, 5 years, it would be nice to have 100 facilities in the US and 100 in Canada. That's kind of where I see ourselves.
That's a lot of work, but a lot of fun. There's nothing more fun than growing. And it sounds like you've already learned a lot how to dodge some of those challenges and surprises that come along. You talked about the importance of team. What has been your approach to hiring and possibly even retaining those team members? Because you seem to see that's the real USP for your business.
Yeah, well, we've been very fortunate. I mean, I think some of the hires that I made early on for our corporate team, they've just been fantastic hires. They've been very committed to the company and to the vision and to try to, sort of go into an existing business and disrupt it with a new level of service and technology. So I think that that's our competitive advantage, and that pervades our staff at the store level. So we hire great staff in the stores. I mean, our strategy there is to To hire good people, to pay more than our competitors. So we're trying to hire more skilled people. We provide them better benefits when it comes to things like vacation or healthcare. And then also monthly bonuses. So we see many, many competitors, their strategy is to, let's see, minimize the labor expense. And I think that's sort of a key weapon. So I feel like in many cases, whatever we spend on labor, we can make 2 to 3 times that in incremental revenue. So while others are sort of cutting labor, they're also cutting revenue. And we've just got a monthly performance plan and it's very simple. That's another thing that I've learned over the years is people make compensation plans extremely, extremely complicated. And as a result, the staff doesn't really know what to do. And they also feel like sometimes it's not fair or it's not tied to their actual performance. So in the simplest case, you know, we'll pay our staff just for the number of rentals they can do in a month, you know, focus on, you know, renting units. And then as the store gets, you know, leased up and it becomes more stabilized, then we'll switch that over to more of a revenue growth plan. So they've got to look at all the different sources of revenue growth, but we don't have, you know, 15 or 20 metrics or hoops to jump through to try and get a monthly bonus. And I think those types of plans really demoralize the frontline staff.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had, by comparison, we've had very few job openings. I mean, there's always turnover, but we've had relatively few vacancies at any one time. And some of our competitors are reporting, very large competitors, that they have 1/3 of their stores that are unstaffed. And that's mostly a retention issue based on the culture and the pay.
Wow. So as you value the employees and you look forward, what areas of training do you think your people might need most in the next 6 months based on the current climate?
Well, the climate is definitely challenging. And I think there has been this shift in society, as you know, you mentioned earlier, towards technology and automation and away from humans. And I think most of our training and coaching, which is ongoing, so as opposed to sort of initial training or annual training, I mean, you really need, you know, coaching regularly, weekly, monthly, by our, you know, kind of sales leaders. I think that basic selling coaching is really critical. I think many, many operators of storage or other businesses, you know, other industrial businesses probably view the business as products versus people. And I think really, to really differentiate ourselves, despite the fact that someone could look at self-storage as being a commodity, right? We're just renting space. The question is, what's the experience like? And, you know, why do people want to do business with you? So I think the constant coaching around the importance of sales, the importance of, you know, following up on your leads, treating the customers with respect, we end up not having to participate in the pricing wars, you know, the race to the bottom. Mm-hmm. because of the service level that we offer. And I had a large potential investor a couple of weeks ago asked me, you know, like, what's the difference? You know, isn't all self-storage the same? And I said, you know, without naming any brands, I said, you know, what hotel do you like to stay at? You know, if you're a, you know, wealthy, you know, investor and you like to stay at, you know, a nice, call it 4-star hotel, is there any difference between that and a, you know, 1-star motel? Like, is there any difference or is it all the same? It's like, oh yeah, it's, you know, significantly different. I was like, okay, well, that's the difference in experience that we're trying to deliver. And I think the competitors are making things easier because right now it's very fashionable to say that you're cutting costs and eliminating staff and going with remote managed facilities, right? So completely unstaffed. Can you imagine if you had never used self-storage before and you were going to a facility with 800 units in it and you didn't know what you were doing? You were going to go talk to a kiosk or try to do it yourself. No one's cleaning it. No one's, you know, keeping it safe. So it's it's becoming easier for us to run our playbook because the entire industry is following the big operators, which, you know, like when you think of a large operator, they're always going to try and cut costs. So that usually that means staff. So if they're delivering no service and we're delivering, you know, world-class customer experience, nobody asks us, you know, or complains if the price is too high.
Absolutely. That's so valuable. And I love that. Wow. What a difference. So we have covered so much background already in our conversation today. So for those of you who are watching this podcast, I highly encourage you to save this and come back a few times, watch it a few more times. There's lots of great nuggets here. If you're an entrepreneur, Jason has really covered some of the things that really make a business stand out. So as we begin to wrap up, Jason, I just have a few rapid fire questions, quick top of mind answers for each. So what is the key to success for you?
Just showing up and adapting. So the world keeps changing and we have to adapt with it.
Beautiful. What is one piece of advice for other business owners?
Easiest piece of advice I would say from my consulting experience and storage experience is to spend more time on your pricing and to test your pricing. I would say most businesses are terrible on pricing and they may have a higher value product, but they're afraid to test the upper limits of their price.
Beautiful, great advice. If you have, what is one book that you're reading now or that you've read most recently that's worth sharing?
I unfortunately do not have any time to read.
Oh, maybe I'll send you a good book to read.
Send me a book. I'll read on my next plane ride.
Awesome, I will. I can probably drop it off, right? If you had to choose one area of your business that you could immediately improve tomorrow, what would it be?
I would say just kind of, you know, maturing into a mid-sized business because right now I find myself struggling to delegate since I've been wearing so many hats and just trying to adapt and survive this roller coaster. So I feel like the ability to kind of build out the team and get to that next level has been a real challenge.
Awesome. Yep. And I don't think you're alone when it comes to entrepreneurs. So, before we get to the final question of the day, how can the folks listening today, how can they learn more about you or your company, or how can they get in contact with you? How will they find you on social media? What is the easiest way for them to get in touch with you?
Probably LinkedIn. So I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So just look up Jason Koonin on LinkedIn or Sunbird Storage. We've got a page and you can send me a DM or you can email me.
Awesome. Very good. We'll make sure we actually post that on the video as well. And then the final question is, what is most inspiring to you today?
I'm inspired daily just by the work that our team does. So, as I mentioned earlier, I view it as being in the people business, and our team is just very dedicated to the brand and to our customers, and they just show up every day and do great work, and I'm just fortunate to work alongside them. So, that's inspiring just seeing how they go above and beyond to just continually surprise and delight our customers.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, Jason. We look forward to seeing you maybe in the next video spotlight about your marketing firm. Thank you
That'd
very
be
much.
great. Thank you.